I just didn't remember the details with any clarity. I might have, before I was put under for the recuperative coma, the one in which my foot was regrown, but now the whole incident felt like it had happened in the remote past, rather than a few weeks ago. I'd sincerely believed that Kaweya would make it, though. At first he seemed to have been the lucky one. The laser pulse had gone right through him without cleaving any vital organs, just as if its trajectory had been mapped in advance by a skilled thoracic surgeon. But complications had set in, and without the means to reach orbit, he would have been arrested and executed as soon as he left the atmosphere. He was forced to accept the best black market medicine he could afford. It had been good enough to repair my leg, but that was exactly the kind of injury the war made commonplace. Complex damage to internal organs required an additional level of expertise which could simply not be bought on the black market. So he died. And here I was, chasing the man who'd killed Kaweya and his wife, aiming to take him down with a single diamond flechette from the clockwork gun. Back before I became a security expert in the employment of Kaweya, back when I was still a soldier, they used to say that I was such a proficient sniper that I could put a slug into someone's head and take out a specific area of brain function. It wasn't true. Never had been. But I'd always been good, and I did like to make it clean and quick and surgical. I sincerely hoped Ryvich wouldn't let me down. To my surprise, the secret passageway opened directly into the heart of the Anchor Point Terminal, emerging in a shadowed part of the main concourse. I looked back at the security barrier, which we'd avoided. Watching the guards scan people for concealed weapons, checking identities in case a war criminal was trying to get off the planet. The clockwork gun, still snug in my pocket, wouldn't have shown up in those scans, which was one of the reasons why I'd opted for it. Now I felt a tinge of irritation that my careful planning had been partially wasted. "Gents," Vasquez said, lingering on the threshold, "this is as far as I go." "I thought this place would be right up your street," Dieterling said, looking around. "What's wrong? Scared you'd never want to leave again?" "Something like that, Snake." Vasquez patted the two of us on the back. "All right, go and bring down that post-mortal shit-smear, boys. Just don't tell anyone I brought you here." "Don't worry," Dieterling said. "Your role in things won't be overstated." "Copacetic. And remember, Snake," he mimed firing a gun, "that hunt we talked about. Consider yourself penciled in, at least on a provisional basis." He vanished back into the tunnel, leaving Dieterling and me standing together in the terminal. For a few moments neither of us said anything, overwhelmed by the strangeness of the place. We were in the surface-level concourse, a ring-shaped hall which encircled the embarkation and disembarkation chamber at the base of the thread. The concourse's ceiling was many levels above, the intervening space crisscrossed by suspended walkways and transit tubes, with what had once been luxury shops, boutiques, and restaurants set into the outer wall. Most of them were closed now, or had been converted into minor shrines or places where religious material could be purchased. There were very few people moving around, with hardly anyone arriving from orbit, and only a handful of people walking towards the elevators. The concourse was darker than its designers must have intended, the ceiling scarcely visible, and the whole place had the quality of a cathedral in which, unseen but sensed, some sacred ceremony was taking place. An atmosphere that invited neither haste nor raised voices. At the very edge of hearing was a constant low hum, like a basement full of generators. Or, I thought, like a room full of chanting monks holding the same sepulchral note.